Morning. You know, all about the giving, right? That is the topic of this month. And giving is a topic where, you know, you have plenty of jokes about, you know, giving and things like that. So one of the stale jokes is like this. It goes like this. The pastor says, you know, I have good news to share and a bad news to share, right? The good news is that we have enough money for our building fund. The bad news is that the money is in your pockets and wallets. So, you know, we Bangalore Bible Fellowship is a trans-denominational fellowship, right? What do you mean by trans-denominational fellowship? All denominations are welcome, right? But when it comes to the offertory, we can probably say that, okay, all denominations are welcome, but 500s and 100s are preferred. Right. So, you know, let me start with some statistics about giving. A poll in church members reported that 17% say that they tithe. Okay, 17% of the people actually say that they tithe. Others say that, okay, we don't tithe. Honest people. Thank God for them. But in reality, only 3% of the church members actually tithe. Only 3%. Okay. 40% will give nothing during the entire year. That's the this is a fact that has come out in America. Tithers, people who generally tithe, make up only 10 to 25% of the normal congregation. Okay. And again, only 5% of the US tithes, entire population, and 80% of the Americans giving only 2% of their annual income to church. Okay, this is for statistics from US. Fortunately, we don't measure such things in India, isn't it? We wonder what will be the statistics if we measure it in India. But anyway, what I want to talk about is not about how much to tithe or how many tithe and things like that. We heard Pastor Albert Davis speak on who should give. He spoke from 2 Corinthians chapter 9. And we heard Brother George Ninen talk about how much should we give. I want to talk this morning about some myths about tithing. Of course, there are plenty of them. But because of the paucity of time, I will just take up one myth about tithing. Okay? And the myth goes like this. God is pleased with anyone who gives. God is pleased with anyone who gives. Now, my argument today is going to be that this is a myth. Do you believe this? Do you believe that God is pleased with anyone who gives? Do you believe that God is pleased with anyone who gives? Can mere giving get one to heaven? Just giving alone. Can one get to heaven just by giving? Can giving substitute faith? Can giving substitute obedience? Right, so that's what we will look at. Is God really pleased with someone who only gives and does nothing? Will God? So let's look at the Bible and try to find out what is God's attitude towards true Christian giving, the God's way. You know, the Bible portion read to us, we know the story. It's a long, long passage. We know the story. The story is about, you know, God asking King Saul to do something terrible. It is, of course, something terrible. I mean, if you actually read, many of the people actually go against God, saying that how can God ask somebody to go and kill everyone, you know, including children and women and, you know, old people and donkeys and horses and all that stuff. How can God do that, right? Now, I'm not going to dwell into that, but the fact is God asked Saul to do something. It might have appeared terrible at that time. I mean, this is not the first time that God is asking people to do some terrible things. God asked Abraham to do a terrible thing of sacrificing his own son, right? But then God was testing him. And even here, that is exactly what God was doing. God was testing Saul. Right? And we know what Saul did. Saul uses his own wisdom, and he uses what is called as his own discretion, and he spares the best of the loot. And he spares the king, King Agag. Right? He decides that, look, these are too good to be destroyed. Right? And of course, he then tries to hide them. And obviously, nothing can be hidden from God. And then when Samuel comes and finds out, Samuel says in the portion that was read to us in 15:14, he says, "What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the cattle or the oxen which I hear?" Nothing can be hidden from God. Right? You can loot, you can keep the best, but it cannot be hidden from the Lord. Now, to add fuel to fire, Saul then starts justifying why he did this. Right? Yeah. So he starts saying, look, my men did, and they found something good, and they had good intentions, and they kept some of the plunder so that they could offer this to, mind you, mind these words, he says, offer it to your God. Lord, your God. Right? Isn't that what he says? He actually, read this 15:15. He says, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord, your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. It's interesting to see what Saul, the term that Saul uses. We kept it so that we could sacrifice it to the Lord, your God. And actually, he repeats it twice. Not just once. You know, to make a mistake once is all right, but Saul does it twice. Saul, it's actually, he goes on to say, if you look at it, you will see it again repeated in verse 23, where he says, the soldiers took the sheep and cattle from the plunder, the best was devoted to God, in order to sacrifice them to the Lord, your God at Gilgal. He repeats it in verse 15 and again in verse 23, making it clear that his intention was to use this plunder to sacrifice to who? Not to his God, to Samuel's God. Right? Now, it's interesting. When it comes to sacrifices, when it comes to giving, it's not my God. It is Pastor Narayanan's God. It is somebody else's God. It is to somebody else's church. It is to somebody else's God that I am asked to give. It is not to my God that I am giving. Right. So this entire attitude of externalizing, this giving, and giving because of compulsion. So Saul was making it very clear that it is your God who gave the law through Moses that I should give, and so I am going to give to your God, right? It's not because I want to give, it is because I am forced to give by the law that your God set up. That's basically Saul's attitude, right? It is not because I want to. Your God said, give. That is what Moses said. So he made the law and he asked me to give. So I am giving, and I am giving to your God, right? So, the fact is this, anyone who uses this term, your God, is an unbeliever. Unless you can say, put your hand on your own heart and say that it is my God that I am saving, it is my God that I am serving, it is my God that I am obeying, it is my God that I am giving to, it is a giving that is done in unbelief. It is a giving that is done in disobedience. It is not something which is given in belief and in faith. That's something that we got to remember, right? Somebody else's God, somebody else's God. So, what Saul was doing was complying to the law. The law stipulates that you need to give, so I give, right? So he was merely giving as a duty, right? And it is beautiful to read God's response to that type of giving. The beautiful pearl of wisdom which comes at the end of the passage that Kalai read to us, which says, does the Lord take great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is to better than sacrifice, and to heed is better than the fat of the rams, etc., etc. So the message is clear. Giving has to come after faith. Giving has to come after believing. Giving has to come after obedience. It cannot be a substitute. It cannot come prior to that. It cannot be done something out of duty. It has to come from the heart. That's basically what the Lord is telling King Saul through Samuel. And this is not the first one. This is not the first one. Actually, you would see this even before the law was given. We know that, you know, it is the law that describes how much you should give and things like that. But this matter of giving by the heart, you know, is repeated much before the law was given itself, you know, right at the beginning. Let's take the case of Abel and Cain, right? Let's go right at the beginning, right? Right at the beginning, if you go, can somebody take up Genesis 4, 3 and 5 and read? And we know that it was much before Moses, right? He was immediately after Adam, so it cannot be after Moses. So even if we don't have our maths right, we know that simple thing, right? Cain and Abel was much before Moses, and what happened to them? Genesis 4, 3 and 5. Can somebody read?
In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also brought an offering, fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he was not looked with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast.
Right. The Bible says, two people made the offering, and God looked at one's offering with favor and the other one's offering, he didn't favor much. And of course, the remaining portions will tell us why, right? Cain was arrogant. Cain was disobedient. Cain was a murderer. He turned out to be a murderer. And he actually, he was so entangled in the pleasures of the world. And the Bible in multiple places tells that Abel was a righteous man. Even in the New Testament, it is repeated multiple times. Abel was a righteous man. So you see here, even before giving was assigned as a duty, God wanted the offerings or the sacrifices or the giving to be done by righteousness and not as a duty. And again, if you look at Cain's offering vis-a-vis Abel's offering, you would see that Cain basically offered something that was easily available to him, plucked out the first fruit and, you know, what was easily available to him. But Abel took time, Abel took effort to choose the best of the lot and then offer. So even the quality of offering mattered there. But more than that, the attitude in which the offering was made mattered, because Cain offered as a duty, as a ritual. At that time, we can't say a duty because the law was not given, but he offered more as a ritual, while Abel offered more as the best. You know, what is best for me, I am offering to the Lord. So God makes it clear that what he looks for is not a ritualistic offering, but an offering made from the heart. Okay, two Bible portions. One of you, if you could take Proverbs 15:8, and another one, if you could take Isaiah 1:13. Proverbs Proverbs 15:8 and Isaiah 1:13.
The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is His delight.
Yeah. The sacrifices of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is His delight. And Isaiah 1:13.
Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incenses is detestable to me. New moons, Sabbaths, and convocations, I cannot help your devil assemblies.
This He is speaking to the unbelievers. He's saying, if you are an unbeliever, stop bringing sacrifices to me. I don't want your sacrifices. I hate your assemblies and things like that. What I need is your heart. What I need is your heart. I am not looking for what you can give. I am not looking for your burnt offerings and sacrifices. I don't need them. Everything in this world is mine and I have created it.